Ladles and germs. Welcome back. Welcome back to the show. Independent Incidentals, episode 3. To episode 4, if you count it like that. I wouldn't count a pilot, but that's just me. Welcome back, everybody, to the show. Let me just adjust that mic real quick. It's a tradition. You have to adjust the mic before the show starts. There we go. Perfect. Let's make sure. Well, this is our true intro. Just quickly just test this out again. Beautiful. It's like music to my ears. God. This was also music to my ears. The soundtrack that you just heard, the songs that you just heard, the one singular song was off the Hilux extension album, Moon Age Lobotomy, by, you guessed it, Chuck Salamone. Why would you guess it? You haven't even learned about the topic yet. Chuck Salamone, featuring Mason Linroth. The song's name, An Endless Cycle, a.k.a. Wayne's Theme. We'll get to that in a second. My opener, we'll quickly dive into what the vibe for this. Listen, I tricked you guys. I lied to you all. I put on the Instagram story that we're goated. We're so back. But in reality, I'm a little tired and I'm a little sleepy and I have to do a midterm today. And you know what? Everything is kind of slowly. Think about a juggling act where you start off with like 3 balls and then eventually the person, the assistant, starts throwing more balls into the mix until the juggler's juggling about 10 balls, right? Oh, and then you get bored of that and you start juggling chainsaws and you start juggling those chainsaws enough. So eventually, that's what I'm doing right now, metaphorically. I'm like, some of them are just basic rubber balls I can drop at any time. This show being included, however, it's a nice looking ball. Think of it like a nice glass orb that if I drop it, it shatters. But it's a beautiful orb. But the rest of them are chainsaws. Yes, the rest, including the midterm and a bunch of other stuff, are chainsaws. Because if I drop one, then my I hate to look at it that way, but like I feel like it just feels to me like my entire life would get destroyed from that point on. But who knows? Maybe I could pull myself out of that hole. Not to get existential on you, Jesus. Sorry, what, like 3 minutes into the show? I didn't mean to do that. You know me, you guys. You know me. I'm just ripping it as it is. And here's the thing. I remember last year when after class with Dominic used to run, and if I didn't have anything prepared, I would just rip it. Like I'd immediately, I just like, okay, no script. I type down like the 3 names of the games that I'm gonna be covering, and then pretend like I know all the games. Like even though I just play them like once or like none at all, even, and I just wanted to talk about them, which was not fulfilling at all. And it's interesting because I just never really had that much time to prepare for them. I mean, obviously, the people watching wouldn't really know that because I'm already like this show is already kind of off the handles by itself. And it doesn't really need that much preparation. But in reality, right now, I've been researching all these topics, like with Slay the Spire and also Hollow Knight. I've been actually researching the development cycle behind just the game itself. I'm not just focusing on like, oh, here's a game. Here's how it works and yada yada. Here's the genre that it fits in. Because at the end of the day, it just seems out of counterintuitive, right? The goal, my goal with this show is trying to show that all these games that I'm showing you are these little gems that I've found in the lard of the bloated games industry are unique in their own special little ways, either in the development or creation of it, or even just their mechanics, graphical design, etc. If I just categorize them under this gigantic blanket of, yes, this is the genre we're covering today, and these are the games that fit that genre. Boop-de-doo, I'm calculating, it's 1 + 1 = 2. If all these numbers are within a specific boundary, then I'm going to cover them. If these games are all roguelikes, then I'll cover them. But that doesn't make any sense to me. That personally seems like a complete opposite direction of where I want to take this show. So, that being said, let's get into today's topic. Because, you know, I'm probably going to run out of material in time. So if I do, this might be a two-parter. You might get today, just like a quick little rundown, and then the next one I'll go dive more deep. Because the problem was, is this game is interesting in a lot of ways. Mainly the fact that I'm not used to what, you know, if you're not a gaming initiate like I am. An RPG, a tactical turn-based RPG with a bit of exploration mechanics sprinkled in, is quite expansive, and I don't want to rush that, you know? I covered the first game, Helix 1. Helix 1 was a very strange episode as well. I remember back when I covered it in AC with D, the shortened form of After Class with Dominic. I had two guests over that time, and the problem was, is that we didn't really cover it. We did not cover that game as extensively as I wanted to. Because the main problem is that they have ADHD. I'm sorry. It's a known fact. They both have ADHD. And the moment we got latched onto this idea of the anti-game, the idea of a game that takes apart the genre that it's in itself, like Undertale and what's some other examples? Omomori, for example, some other ones that completely shatter the genre they are built for and want to tell more of a cohesive story or like dissecting and critiquing the genre that they're a part of. Hylix is not about that. I don't know how that even came up to begin with. Hylix was a completely standalone thing. It doesn't break any genres, but there is a distincting factor, which I'll get to in a moment. But the fact that we got on that tangent and we talked about, I don't know, Sans and the whole idea of the genocide route and all that kind of stuff and the ideas of how Toby Fox wanted to implement that, we got off the rails. I mean, I had no time to talk about Hylix. So, you know, to be fair, I didn't have a script. So, like I said before, I am putting it out there this time. I have a script, but I'm not that prepared. I did not finish the game. Hylix 2 is such a gigantic topic to cover. So, we're just going to touch the tip of the iceberg, and in maybe next episode we'll get a little deeper on it. That being said, let's dive in to Hylix 2. I just figured out it's called Hylix 2. That's the interesting thing as well. It's called Hylix, not Helix. Sorry. So sorry. I didn't mean to. Mason Linroth, please forgive me. I did not mean to misconstrue or even possibly mispronounce your game's title. No, I'm sure he's a great guy. Mason Linroth is the creator of Hylix. But his history on the internet also goes a bit deeper. He graduated with a fine arts degree, and then after that, didn't really have anything to do with it, I'd imagine. So he had to go into game design. So it was a couple years after when he graduated in 2012 that he started to work on game design as a whole and started working on game jams. Wow, it's almost like that's like a creative hotspot for all the game developers to conglomerate in and try to figure out like what they want to make their style in, right? He was working on a lot of Ludum Dare game jams, a specific game jam that happens, I think, once or twice a year. That's been going on since 2002. So a lot of other games are also going to be inspired and even like tailing off the success of their original game that either won Ludum Dare or just got the idea from Ludum Dare and then makes their own games from it. For example, Inscription, which I might cover later, actually. It's possible. Pony Island. I think Hollow Knight as well, also. Yeah, Hollow Knight, which I covered last episode. Last week, this episode also had Hollow Knight in it. And what else? I think there's a few others, but that's pretty much the whole extension, the whole thing. And there's a bunch of other game jams that also go on. For example, I tried to do a bit of a game jam with Godot. There's the Godot Wild Jam that you have to make a game in Godot. However, you can pretty much go wild with it. I made a little prototype for a game, like a tower defense robot game where like the theme was malfunction. So I try to make the robots, like after they lose a certain amount of energy, malfunction, and they have a special effect and then they die. And you have to figure out how to use those in advantageous ways to defeat the hordes of enemies. If you want to check that, that's on my itch.io, which I might link later. But for now, let's get back into his history as a game developer. So the problem is that Ludum Dare recently purged all their archive for like all their games, which is very, very depressing. So I wasn't able to find the games that he made back in the day. However, there are still two that remain on his itch.io page. One of which is called Vada, which he made in 2016 for the, I think, 35th Ludum Dare. And then another one in late 17. Let me just see if I can pronounce that. Mold Ula Mulum. There you go. The thing is with this game that was made in late 2017 and these games is that it kind of cemented his overarching style, which made him prepare for the sequel to Helix, because he already made Helix at this point. I'll get to that in a second. However, let's just quickly go over these games. So the former game, Vada, was made in 2016. The theme for this Ludum Dare was Shapeshift. And he made from the specific engine that he was using, I think it was Flash he was using. It was kind of in the same vein as if you remember from the grade, like elementary school, early middle school computer lab, there's a little program called KidPix, where you could like draw, like you had like these little tools that you can use to draw stuff and like little stamp tools to make it look real weird. I remember it anyway. If you do, then that's fantastic. But, you know. The idea also was it was a little bit more abstract, a little bit more surrealist than other ones, because it had like very, very weird stamp tools from what I saw from the screenshots. The problem was with like, I couldn't play it. Because again, rest in peace, Adobe Flash. You will be missed. So I couldn't play it on like this computer specifically. But I think you might have it on the... You might have it on Newgrounds, if I remember correctly. So I'll have to go see if he has Vada on there, if I can try it out. Maybe I can come back to it and quickly give a quick review. But the other game, Muldula Mulum. God. We'll get a lot more of that as we go down, as you will see. Because this game specifically, was, I'll say it now, reused in a specific way in the Helix 2 game. The main engine, the same idea was used in this. And I think it was also kind of an experimentation of the Unity game engine. So, you know, you see a bit of cross... You see a different exchange of ideas, different experimentations that he was going through while he was finished Helix 1, trying to figure out what he was doing next with Helix 2. And in the between phases, he was just working on different game jams to see what worked, which I thought was very interesting and a little bit inspirational. So, Helix 1 was already out at this time, created in 2015. It really didn't have a really... It was a game, I will say that much. I guess maybe the anti-game that I was describing in this case was the fact that it isn't really, it doesn't have a cohesive mechanic. The mechanic is obviously, it was made in RPG Maker. The game engine RPG Maker is a mainly RPG-focused game engine, unless you want to make, like, if you really want to test its limits... It's made for RPGs. So it's going to be in that same format with, you know, your roster of characters. You have specific abilities you can use on the enemies to attack them individually, turn-based, of course. However, it didn't really progress in a way that an RPG usually does. It was a very interesting thing to watch and see progress as I played through it last year, back in 2023. But... Oh, no, I actually did play it in 2024, didn't I? Yeah, I did. Huh. Besides the point, Helix 1 was, I think, another experimentation of his. He was getting down a lot of his style, which I think really, truly transpired and blossomed in Helix 2. Helix 2 is an actual game, in my opinion. In my opinion, Helix 1 is kind of more of a, like, wavy, dreamy kind of... retrospective of, like, this weird world that he created and the different characters that he kind of formed in there. The entire game, Helix 1 and Helix 2, is made of clay. which is one of the more interesting facets. You don't see that often. The only other game that has actual clay figures that they use in the game is another game that was very old back in 1995 called Neverhood. Not Everhood, that's a different game that was released back in like 2021, I think. This was in 1995 when there's like a little character that made of clay, and there's kind of like these procedural cutscenes and all that fun stuff, puzzles and all that cool stuff. You kind of explore the world the same kind of weird, dreamy, kind of lucid atmosphere of Helix. But Helix takes it 10 notches up, in my opinion. Helix as a concept, as like the world that Lynn Roth created, is a completely, I guess, how would you describe it? I guess just like it feels like a drug trip. I'm sorry to tell you. It feels so floaty and like, God, it's so hard to describe. It's you have to see some of these screenshots. All the characters that you meet, all the terrain and all that kind of stuff is made out of clay. That is the basic concept of the design, the aesthetical design of this game. Lynn Roth's thumbprint is using clay and molds to like create the graphics of the game. I remember watching a quick little deep dive on Hilux, and I remember there was like a little clip showing Lynn Roth, like showing off all like the different models he used, and like him showing the process of him screenshotting it, putting it into like Photoshop, and then touching it up, and then putting it into the game. It's so interesting. But the main idea of the main character Wayne was that he just had a lump of clay, right? He just rolled it up a bit, and then shaped up the corner so it looked like a crescent moon. Get it? Wayne, waning moon. Wayne, that. More moon themes appear later in the Helix 1 and Helix 2 arcs. However, that was the most basic design, and that created like one of the first characters. Wayne was one of the first characters, and it also is the character that you originally play as. He's like the main, he's the front man of the group. Let's just detail exactly what goes on in Helix 2. You start off in Wayne's house. In Hilux 1, you're able to defeat the main big bad, a person named Gibby, Gibbous Moon, Waning Moon, opposites, the thematic relevance, conclusion, cyclical natures, etc., etc. You start in Wayne House because you defeated the Overlord Gibby in the last game in Hilux 1. However, now that Wayne doesn't have an antagonist anymore, he's literally he's cloned and he created an army of Waynes. Here's the thing, though. At the start of the game, you are Wayne, right? That is much as certain. However, you go through the Wayne house, you look through all the different Waynes that are like residing in the Wayne house, and you just wonder to yourself, am I just the clone of this almighty Wayne that lives on top of the house? Or all of us Wayne? Are like, are we a hive mind of Wayne? Or maybe even we were the first Wayne, but apparently like maybe there's like a species of Wayne, you know? That's what I kind of mean by the trippy, surrealist aspect of this game. You just start out the game waking up in bed, right? Oh, cool. I have a cool, slick leather jacket on, and my head is a crescent moon. Fantastic. You can control the character and all that kind of stuff. And then you just walk to the living room, and you see, like, two Waynes just sitting, oh, hey, how's it going? I'm Wayne. And that's Wayne over there, yeah. We learn new powers by watching the TV. And that is actually where you get your first special move. I think it's called I'm telling you, these the names that they call them are a carryover from Gibby's rule. I'm pretty sure that's how it goes, because Gibby back in the first game created the world and garbled up its text, so everyone just said random things based on a random word generator. I think that does come up somewhere at the end of Helix 2, but I haven't got there yet. So we shall see on the next installment if that is the case. But the idea is that in the lore of Hylix. Sorry, it's just so, it's habits are hard to break. In the world of Hylix, there is something called the accretion that we assume that it maybe this world is also like kind of like a derivative of like the real world that kind of got screwed up in some way. Because everything's made out of clay, everything looks like it could melt at any moment, and there's these random little TVs scattered everywhere. These TVs are kind of like worshipped a lot. Like you see them a lot in like this one specific area where they're trying to create this gigantic satellite tower to like reach the wavelength of the original signal. Very, very trippy concepts there. But like the idea is that you watch the TV, you get a new power. You can use it on enemies or you can use it to like buff up your team in a specific way. For example, Pomar Blep allows you to gain the block ability and also heal a little bit. Sorry, the block property. You become blocked when you're doing it. That is also another very interesting thing that kind of got carried over from Hylix 1. There's all these very, very interesting status effects. So you have normal ones like burning, poison, etc. I think bleeding as well, but they're called slightly different things. Like I think bleeding is actually called leaking. There's another one called, like, dissolute, which means that you're, like, literally, like, melting at the seams and you can't heal that much HP when you're in that state. There's also other things, like, for example, there's one enemy that causes you to, the entire party to sleep. It spreads out sleeping spores. But if you're caffeinated, you're immune to it, which is also a very interesting concept. Now, back to the idea of the Wayne House. I kind of got a little bit lost during the Wayne House because I was like, okay, this is interesting, but it doesn't follow the same formula as Hylix 1 because I was thinking too much in the idea that this was an anti-game in a way. This game is actually a real game. It actually polished a lot of stuff. So the idea that I was just looking for, like, I don't know, like a specific like hidden item that's like hidden around somewhere. I was like, wait a minute, am I supposed to just leave? Yes, you're just supposed to leave. It's also a 3D environment, so I was kind of thrown off in that way as well. Anyway, you leave the Wayne House. You get a mission from the Almighty, the God Wayne, to visit the neighboring town of New Muldul to figure out what happened to Pomgorna, which is another character that I'll get to in a moment, and also figure out what's happening specifically with Gibby, because, Gibby's going to get resurrected soon. Oh, maybe that's why that he was making an army of Waynes. Who knew? You get the New Muldul, and everyone's been kidnapped and brought to Viewax's edifice. Oh God, all these names are just like they're everywhere and nowhere at the same time. I can't really put them anywhere in my brain. You have to orient your brain in a way to make it like all line up because it takes the same logical format of an RPG. You get abilities, you get items, you get a party members that you eventually accrue over time. But the naming schemes and the trippy, weird, drippy claymation style of it all makes you have to readjust your brain to focus on anything, try to memorize like specific stuff. I'm like, New Muldul, New Muldul. You have to go to New Muldul. It also helps that you have a little goal dialogue box when you open up the map, the menu. However, you still have to like quickly shift your brain like three steps to the left in order to actually like understand what Lynroth was trying to like get you to do. Signifiers are very important in this game, and I feel like it actually does it pretty well. That being said, though, you obtain the new metaphor. The new metaphor, you may ask? Oh yes, the new metaphor. The new metaphor is the thing that allows you to hyper dash. So you have your basic dash, your rolling dash, right? So you just like, if you're on the ground, you can do a quick like dodge roll. But with the hyper dash, if you're in the air and you press the high dash button, you go and you're just flying through the air. It's fantastic. It allows you to get access to new specific areas on the map. Again, it's very, very interesting how he names a lot of these things. It's kind of like you could name something anything. But the idea to just name something based on, like, whatever the hell comes to your mind, like, Wayne makes sense because he's a waning moon. His head is a waning moon. But for example, take Pongorma, which is the next character you meet along the way to view Wax's edifice. What's that supposed to entail? He's like a knight that follows a specific code. He can shoot lightning bolts out of his hand. What am I supposed to... How am I supposed to remember this name? I mean, at the same time, though, his kind of the style is very distinct. So, you know, it's understandable. You also unlock other characters along the way. For example, Dedismol, who is the healer of the group. Pongormo is the more like tank slash very heavy-hitting individual target character of the group. Like, he's more of the... I'd like to say just general damager, DPS. Like, it allows you to do output a lot of damage, but for a little bit of payoff. So, for example, he has Lightning Bolt, which is an ability that allows him to do a lot of damage up front, but then he has to spend a turn just, like, stunned. So it's very good to get, to like, that last hit on the enemy when, you know, you have to wait for a turn to get out of the stunned status effect anyway. So, you have a few other characters. Dedismon, whose his ability is Foam Shield, which allows you to overheal your basic hit points. So you increase your max hit points, which in this game is called flesh. The amount of flesh you have dictates how healthy you are. And when you get to zero, then your character dies. It's simple as that. Will, in this case, is your mana bar. So that's how much, like, your specific gestures, as the game calls it. Again, everything is translated over, so you have to readjust. You have four different things you can do on your turn. You can either snap, which is your basic attack. You just snap at the enemy. The music is so groovy, too. During our intermission slash closing, I'll have to show you one of the tracks. It's just so... It oozes that 70s stoner rock vibe, but also kind of goes a little bit more into prog as well. It's just so juicy. The fighting theme also follows that, because it's a kind of a more relaxed zone. In a lot of other RPGs, you have to either feel complete, like, stress. You're like, oh god, I'm gonna die. You hear, like, the boop, boop, boop of, like, Final Fantasy or, like, whatever other game that kind of does that annoying 1 HP sound. Or it just does, like, a triumphant, like, oh yeah, I'm so powerful now. I can defeat these enemies so quickly. And it does, like, the Pokemon. You know, that kind of thing. In this game, it's a more relaxed, chill vibe. You know, like, you're probably gonna, like, oh yeah, there's some enemies, I gotta snap them. So snapping is your first ability you can do. Another thing you could do is your gestures. Gestures are the thing that allows you to expand. That allows you to do specific special moves. For example, let me go back to Dedismon's special ability. It's Foam Shield. So it allows you to heal. I think it removes a specific amount of side effects like leaking, and also gives you more max HP, so you can overheal if you wanted to. Samsnosa, the final character that you meet, and it's interesting because Pongorma and Dedismon are kind of met kind of together. Even though they're on completely separate islands, it's really easy once you get the new Matophor to transfer between those islands and then immediately find Dedismon. Dedismon is the third character. Samsnosa is the fourth character. The fourth character that you find on your journey. She is more of the AoE hitter. Like, she does a good amount of damage, but more spread out. So you can easily take over this specific enemy that I hate, which I'll also get to in a moment. But there's other things as well that make this game quite interesting and polished compared to Helix 1. One of those things that I will not include is the platforming minigame. God, I hate the platforming minigame. I despise it. You have to do it twice. There's two times where you have to do the platforming minigame. And it's better on the second one. However, the first one is just pulling teeth. It is the one thing that detracts from this game, in my opinion. Everything else is so smooth, relaxed, nice. But when you get into the platforming minigame, you know you're in for a bad time. You know it's bad whenever I say, yes, yes, this is fun, I'm having a great time. I remember myself muttering that to myself every single time. Because the problem is that I feel like he was a bit rushed, because this is the part of the game that was taken from that other Ludum Dare game, that one that he made for Ludum Dare back in 2017. What was it called again? Let's see. It was called Try it at home, folks. Try it at home. Try to pronounce Muladulamom. Muladulamom. It sounds like a Pokemon name. Muladulamom. Oh. But that specific style of platforming was taken from that game. So, I just don't... There's two things that I don't like about this game. One, first of all, the main and most egregious thing is the fact that when you're on a moving platform, I don't know if it's just like on him or he purposely did it. I'm going to hope that it was the former, because if it's the latter, I don't know, Linroth, what the hell you were thinking, because problem is that whenever you're on a moving platform, it eats your momentum. So it's like all janky. You're trying to jump, but like you jump so like barely as high as you do normally. So when you're trying to time your jump to another moving platform, it eats all your momentum. So you have to like make sure you're like, oh, I got a double jump, and then I got a dash, and I double jump again. Another thing also is the fact that the platforms aren't like, they're angular for some reason. Why are they angular? I get he wants to kind of describe this beautiful, it's still like claymation, which is beautiful. And it's kind of like that mesh of pixel art and claymation at the same time. But the problem is that when I'm trying to jump on a platform and it's like a smooth curve, there's nothing to hold on to. I can't tell whether I just need to dash a little bit farther, or if I like completely mistimed my jump, or if it's just the game screwing with me. I don't know. Linroth, what have you done to me? Besides the point, though, the minigame is satisfying in some ways. I do love the just the basic kind of like retro kind of shooting mechanics as well. You have to like just keep mashing the button if you want to shoot multiple at the same time, or you can charge your attack like in Mega Man, which I find is pretty fun to do when you can like hit an entire enemy hive through a wall. But like, you know, it's mandatory the first time, it's not the second time. So at least that. And even then, the second time you have to do it is A, optional, and B, less teeth pulling. Still, I love the design, and I love like the little like arcade cabinet you have to play it on, even though like it's supposed to be like this. You play it in View Axe's lair. It's like the way you can get the key to beat him. Like you get the key to unlock his door to get to where he is. Wait, I don't think it even is. No, it isn't. It's just the way you can get to the first Sage, which is something that I haven't even touched yet, so I'm not going to discuss that. Main idea is that you climb this tower, you get the View Wax, it's the first encounter you have to beat in order to get to, you have to see what he's planning, basically. That's the idea, right? I'm trying to remember specifically what, he's just like your first boss, right? So he has a bunch of little minions that also kind of like are there, so you have to like pick those off first, and he does like this big attacks. So, you know, you easily dispose of him. You get a bunch of XP. The currency is bones. So, you know, once you defeat him, you get, like, at least, like, 50 bones, I think, or 100 bones. And also, he was keeping a bunch of people locked inside of his prison. Voluntarily, of course. Allegedly voluntarily, yes. Oh, right. That gets me to my next topic as well. Pullmen. There's a bunch of cool, kooky little characters. You can look up on the Hilix wiki if you want to. But there's a specific enemy called Pullmen, and they suck, and I hate them. Because what they are is they have a special ability called Multiply. Ah, so much fun. So they can literally, like, during the middle of, like, when you're trying to dispose one of them, there's, like, usually one or two that are on, like, the basic, like, when you first encounter, like, a specific enemy encounter, there's, like, a bunch of different enemies scattered around. And one of them is probably a Pullmen, but you're like, oh, I gotta do these guys first because they do more damage and they're, like, less HP, so you pick off those guys first. But then the Pullmen multiply. They grow into two, just like Wayne did. They multiply, and then they become two Pullmen. And then I have to pick those guys off, and they multiply again, and then I'm like, oh no, what are you doing to me? That's the main reason I haven't completed this game, is because the encounters specifically. the encounters are the thing that I completely slow me down. What should be, I feel like I should only be able to deal with them in, like, say, I don't know, 2 minutes tops per encounter. Some of these encounters go for 10 minutes. I was almost late to my lecture, my online lecture, because I literally was, like, in the middle of it. I was like, oh, damn. So I was quickly finished up. I think I had, like, one or two more turns I had to do before I finished the encounter, and then I was able to, like, quickly hop into the lecture and do that at the same time. I was like, phew. The things I do for you people, honestly. Anyway, that's Pullman for you. There's also a bunch of other funny characters. Like, if I go to the Wikipedia, if I go to the wiki real quick, let's see what fun characters there are. Hikes to enemies. Let's find out. Hylix 2 enemies. There's also another interesting thing called dying, which is interesting. But what the I like a game that kind of goes beyond the mold of what you normally think of as dying in a game. Normally in a game, you're like, ah, game over, try again, right? In this game, though, you go to a specific place called the afterlife. And the afterlife is interesting because it doesn't break down your momentum in the game. Normally, when you're dying, you just have to restart to the last checkpoint and then move on from there. No, no, no. In this, there's another currency called meat that you collect by killing enemies, which then you can use to increase your max XP in the afterlife. Additionally, also, there's also a bunch of other little secrets that you can find in the afterlife as well. Like, for example, there's a little cave. If you find the key, you can find the specific cave that allows you to get a new special ability, because there's a little TV in there, which is fantastic. But let's look at these other enemies real quick. The basic enemy, the one that appears the most, is called the Tyro, and it looks kind of gross. All these enemies kind of look like they're constantly walking towards you, or like they're dancing to the beat, kind of. So it's like you're kind of just like moonwalking while you're snapping at them, using your main attack to defeat them. The Tyro is like a fairly weak enemy that doesn't really do much. Once you're over-leveled, you can pretty much dispose of them, like, just, like, instantly. Just, like, one snap or, like, one special ability. But the interesting thing is you have to pick them off quickly because they can call for help. That's their main ability. So that means they can, like, quickly, like, oh, yeah, by the way, these Hillock guys, they suck. I need some more backup. And then they'll get a new enemy on the screen for you to fight, which is great. There's also a bunch of other ones. The first boss that you encounter, Viewax. He looks kind of feathery. He has like a bunch of like fur almost on his face. He has like a weird. It's very hard to describe. He just looks very, very odd. He kind of looks like Palm Gorna in a specific way because he has like a weird helmet on his head. But he is. Let's see, what does Wikipedia say? Is a follower of Gibby's ideals. Wow, how topical. Whoa, resurrecting a dead leader for your own gains and because you specifically think that they have a specific ideal? Whoa! That's a little bit too political for me, my friend. This game is propaganda.
It's not propaganda. Try. You gotta believe me. You gotta believe me, man. Helix is just a chill ass. It's just a chill game. It's chill vibes, man.
Anyway, besides the point, let's quickly wrap this up. So, Helix is a very interesting game, basically on the premise of the idea that it's kind of a trippy, pseudo real, pseudo like game. You know, like it plays like a game. It definitely acts like a game, especially in its sequel. But the idea of its drippy, weird, distorted, surreal graphical design and, like, claymation style, it makes it, it just adds a completely new layer to it. It feels like you're just playing a game from another world. It generally, I think the creator of the game also mentioned that as well. When interviewed, I think Lynn Roth specifically said that he wanted to feel like the game. To us, it's one of the most bizarre things, like, constantly. However, to the main characters and to the civilians of the world, it's just another Tuesday. It kind of represents that as well. It's like a chill, like, oh yeah, this is just a job we have to do, and we have to do it quickly. We have to kill Gibby again. Uh-oh. And to us, it just feels completely alien. It just doesn't click unless you play it for enough time. And I feel like that's something that we have to continue working on. And I feel like we have to open our horizons, because we keep expecting games to be in this specific categorical sense where you have to follow these archetypes and you have to follow this specific design. If you want an FPS, you have to have, you know, a specific realism to it. Everything is trying to get more realistic in a lot of times, but we have to derealize reality. We have to derealize all these games in order to actually understand what we want out of them, right? That's the main problem with the industry nowadays. We get so caught up in the same habits over and over again, and pop culture in general, that we have no time to experiment, no time to actually try new things. And that's the spice of life. That's the variety for you. If we had if one formula worked every single time, what would you have? What kind of life would we be leaving right now? So, you know, I'll leave you with that. And if I finish the game, I'll let you know how it is. But I think we'll be moving on to another game closer to Halloween as well. So be ready for that. I'll be excited to try out some new games over the long reading week that I have. No episodes next week. We shall be completely, completely silent on that time. We'll be working on midterms, all that fun stuff. And I hope you all have a fantastic time. Let me leave you on. We have a good solid 13 minutes of music, so I'm going to leave you on a few fun Helix 2 soundtrack bites. So, we're going to go in order. Them's Fighting Words, That's a Big Stick. I think we can go, yeah, so yeah, we'll go with that. So, Them's Fighting Words, the boss, the battle theme, the main default battle theme. Then we have Xeno Arcadia, which I... that gives me bad vibe, bad memory, so I'm just going to skip that one for now. we're going to go with That's a Big Stick, which I think is one of the boss themes. I think that's actually Viewax's theme. So we'll put that there too. And then we'll go with Prevailing Western Lees. I don't even know what this is, but I'm going to play it. Why not? And we can also go... this one. Just turn it up a bit. Yeah, no, that's bad memories right there. Xeno Arcadia is the one with the platforming, so I don't want to touch that one. We can go. What's the one with the? Let me look that up real quick. I don't want to play anything right now because I have to edit it in between. But let me look up what music plays during or when in Airship Helix 2. Oh, I already have that one. That's Prevailing Westerlies. Fantastic. Okay, cool. So then I'll just put Battle Alternate. I think that's that's the second boss battle, which I won't spoil until I get there next episode. But I'll play that as well, just for the hell of it. Why not? All right. I think we have our cue. So that is what we're going to be playing. Them's Fighting Words, That's a Big Stick, Prevailing Westerlies, and then Battle Alternate. And then I will leave you, and I'll see you next week. I hope you have a fantastic reading week, and I'll see you in 2 weeks. Love you all. Ladies and germs, that was Independent Incidentals Episode 3. Bye-bye.